Hello, and welcome to Broadway Baby, the podcast taking one casual theater goer to full-out fangirl. I'm your host and Broadway Baby at the same time, Alex Fasella, here without my lovely Broadway parents, Kimberly Cooper Schmidt and Jay Schmidt. But I'm very pleased to be joined by, so these interviews I'm doing with Broadway Baby fans, but also musicians that I like, and especially people who knew me pre-theater fascination, and I've got one of those people who is a really good musician. He's a dear friend, Rick Soriano. How are you doing, Rick?
Hey, how's it going, man? How's it going, buddy?
I'm going pretty good. That didn't make grammatical sense. I'm doing pretty good. You can tell by the fact that I said, I'm going pretty good. I'm not doing really good, but I'm...
Don't worry, you're not alone there.
Yeah, man. Oh, dude. So how's your quarantine going?
So I know it sounds really weird, but as musicians, the quarantine has its up and downs. The obvious down is that a lot of our gigs got canceled, and that's the downside. But on the plus side, though, with all this downtime, we're able to actually do a lot of recording, a lot of songwriting. I've just been basically just, you know, putting my nose to the grindstone and just writing some new material and recording and teaching myself new instruments. So, yeah, it's, you know, the silver lining in this all.
Oh, you're teaching yourself new instruments? Because I know you're a guitar player and then you're a bassist, which we'll get to. But what new instruments are you teaching yourself?
So a while ago, I purchased, like just on a whim off of Craigslist, a Chinese harp, or it's a Chinese zither called a guzheng, spelled G-U-Z-H-E-N-G. So I'm teaching myself that, and it's a really cool instrument. It has that cool, like old Chinese chamber or emperor's court sound. So I got that, and then I've been teaching myself a lot of slide guitar recently. That's like my newfound love in terms of musical instrumentation is the slide guitar. So it's been doing that.
Yeah, slide guitar is so much harder than anyone knows until they actually try to do it, because there's so much muting involved. It's if you don't do it with your other hand, it sounds god awful.
Oh yeah, for real. And like, I'm guilty of that. When I first picked it up, I was watching, you know, I was just learning off of YouTube and just performance DVDs of some of my slide guitar heroes like Dwayne Allman, and I was like, how does he just make this seem so seamless? Because like when I do it, I forgot about and realized damping and muting were critical to like the whole process. So basically in the beginning, like, yeah, my guitar has just sounded like best way to describe it to basically a saw trying to cut through a garroted wire. So
because I've heard that sound because I've tried to do it without before I knew you had to mute stuff. And I was like, oh, Jesus, this is like it's past a day, like a dying cat level of upsetting sound.
Yeah. But I mean, like with practice, I'm getting there. Then I have Derek Trucks and Robert Randolph, who are arguably like the best slide guitarists alive mm-hmm. on this planet. So I'm using them as like motivation to like to practice every day because they just make that instrument sing, literally nice. Sing.
Okay. So that'll lead into my next question. I know now normally I have like theater fans on here and you're not a theater hater, but you're not like a fan. So normally I ask like what musicals are you listening to get through this? But like what kind of music are you listening to get through this?
I mean, so just like personally, you know, I'm a big metalhead and I play in a lot of metal bands or as like a hired gun. You know, obviously heavy metal, like extreme metal, doom metal, death metal. That's like my primary, like what I'm listening to. I also like to foray into like electronic and hip hop and jazz, which is like probably like the second most genre I'm really into. One thing that you've seen and you guys can see me on my Instagram is that I have a Roland sampler that I often like to make beats with. So that's like my second love on top of just doing, you know, heavy metal guitar. And then the third genre I've been listening to heavily is world music. So I've been listening to a lot of music from West Africa. Like I've been listening to a lot of like good Afrobeat music. And I've been listening to a lot of music from the Middle East and India. So yeah, I have like pretty weird eclectic taste, but thanks to you though, I've been really getting into musicals and like, you know, realizing like just how much complexity and how much beauty and thought is like put into just like that whole genre. And like, I'm kicking myself for just overlooking it for like this long.
Huh. You're like me without the period where you were like really vehemently against it. Like,
yeah, I mean, in terms of like, you know, my experience, the theater, high school, I did pit band for Seussical. I think it's called what? Seussical the Musical? Is that what it was?
Yep.
So I did Seussical the Musical. I played the bass in the pit band for that production. I only did that. And then I did a play my junior year. It was Thomas Stoppard's Arcadia.
Okay.
And it's basically like, you know, one of those plays that was like goes back and forth between the 19th century and modern day. You know, is this tracing the roots of, like, it's like a mystery. They're trying to figure out what happened to this hermit that was described, you know, very vaguely in these journals. So I played one of the modern day characters, like one of the modern day scholars who I only had like really one monologue, and that was like the extent of my performance and all that one scene. But college, I did the Bolognese Gamelan Ensemble, which had a big theater component to that.
Yeah, because I went to one of those. I don't believe I saw you. You said you danced in one, right? I don't think I saw you dance. I saw you definitely play.
Yeah, the first, because I was in it for all 4 years. So the first 3 years, I was just a performer, like, you know, musician. I played the drums in it and the gongs. I played the gongs and the drums, which were a lot of fun. But then, like, my senior year, I just,
if the 70s taught us anything, gongs are really fun.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I was always the first to run to those massive gongs and all that, you know.
Rick, stop hoarding gongs. You're like, but I need to play this Rush song.
Exactly. That's how you know the song starts and ends. So, like, you know, you definitely want to have that role, just like to ring that gong. My senior year, I kind of broke out my shell and I gave dancing a shot. So there was a lot of dancing, and then the only spoken words was not even English. It was like in the Balinese language, but it was really beautiful because a lot of these songs that they had for it were sung, you know, verses from the Hindu text, the Ramayana. So I didn't realize that at the time, but it was very rhythmic. So, you know, that was like kind of, I guess, like my exposure and dabble in the theater world.
Huh. So the lyrics were often just scripture of Hinduism specifically, or would it be different types of religions? But that's just one that you were doing.
I think because Bali is a Hindu island nation, I believe it was most of those plays were just, you know, adaptations of like scriptures, like old Hindu texts and stuff. So, but they made it really beautiful. So,
Really cool. I mean, the Mountain Goats made an album that's all just Bible references, and it's rad. So I'm all for throwing biblical references in. I mean, Jesus Christ Superstar is one of my favorite shows.
Oh, and yeah.
Have you heard Superstar?
Yeah. It's okay. Actually really great. I listened to that one because when I was a teenage metalhead, I was into Marilyn Manson's Antichrist Superstar. So I was trying to figure out, where you got that title? It was like, it's a pun on Jesus Christ Superstar. So, the most ironic way to get into a musical.
Yeah, myself included, but I think a lot of people, whenever I've been like, I'm a huge Jesus Christ Superstar fan, if they've never heard the whole thing, they just think it's like, Jesus Christ Superstar. And they're like, that sucks. I'm like, no, you don't get it. That album's fucking metal. Like, Heaven on Their Minds is an excellent, that's like a heavy metal riff. It's one of my favorite rock songs that's ever existed, you know? Oh. The whole album is great, but like, Andrew Lloyd Webber doing the Bible, that elevator pitch does not give quite justice to how good and how cool that album is.
Yeah, it definitely takes repeated listens, but yeah, it's definitely a gem of Broadway and musicals. Yeah.
Definitely. So you told me your background with theater, but tell me what's your background with just music in general, how you got into playing, and then we'll get into our shared music history, but like, let's give me your origin story.
Oh God. My mom, actually, she was a big, classical guitarist. I mean, she never did it professionally, but, she was really big into, playing like the Spanish flamenco and old traditional Spanish folk songs. So, you know, I used to listen to her, and then when I was old enough to basically play an instrument myself, you know, I started out on drums in elementary school, and then I picked up the guitar. I followed my mom. Then I was actually playing the church youth minstrel for a really long time. But what really made me want to become a musician was, you know, obviously MTV and my exposure to seeing Korn and Limp Bizkit, you know, on MTV made me want to like take it to the next level instead of just, you know, playing guitar, you know, in church. I was like, oh, wow, like the whole rock star thing was just really appealing to me. So I really got into that. And then high school, I was in a bunch of metal bands. Continued into college playing in a bunch of metal and jazz and fusion bands, and you know, took a break from music for a little bit, and then recently once I got back in my 30s, I got back into music, and I'm doing full on metal and world music at this point. So yeah, you know, it's in a nutshell, you know, like it's been a big part of my life, the music.
Yeah. Now, listeners, I can't remember if I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but there was a time in college when I was playing a lot of guitar. It was the height of my Dylan phase, and I decided I want to get a band to back me up. And I did, and Rick was the bass player of that band. And it was a very funny moment, because when you came to see The Disposal when I was in it with Kimberly and Jay, and we were all getting drinks afterwards, I go run to the bathroom, come back, and you guys are talking. And then you ran away to go to the bathroom, and they go, he said that you guys were in a band and that you were the front man? Huh. I was like, yeah, there's a lot you guys don't know about me.
Yeah, it's just like opening a chapter that they haven't gone to yet.
Yeah. It's like I was wearing sunglasses all the time, even at night. It was a whole thing. The harmonica holder did not leave my neck for a while. It was not the greatest look I've ever had in my life, but it was a fun time because we were a big band. We were six people.
Yeah,
we were called Obviously Five Believers, which is a track on Dylan's Blonde on Blonde.
Good song.
I think we never quite. I feel like every show we did, we'd forget a song that we had rehearsed. Not that we'd forget how to play it. We just like it'd be like a revolving door of like, oh yeah, we forgot to do that one, and then it would just be a different. And our output was. It was sort of like, I describe it as kind of like, it was a lot of 60s stuff, but sometimes we would do 90s stuff. Like we did Smashing Pumpkins, but we did it as if like the Kinks did it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like yeah, we put that like, kind of acoustic or a sort of like Britpop kind of sound over it. And I was using, obviously taking any excuse to play the harmonica, which surprisingly sounds really good over Smashing Pumpkins. I think I'm the only person that's ever done that, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah, you were like the only frontman in all those college bands who actually did do the harmonica and guitar thing. I don't even think there was like this other band on campus that covered a Neil Young song. And I don't even think they did that with the harmonica and the guitar.
Wow.
That's like part of Neil. Yeah, so I think you hold that title of playing the harmonica and singing.
And I will hold on to that, I guess.
Yeah, but it was a fun time, though. We had a lot of fun. Yeah, and I think the reason why we forgot to always play a song is because we would just really get into a jam. I mean, like, all the musicians, like, you basically won the draft in terms of, like, all the musicians on campus for assembling that group.
I sure did. Yeah, so, listeners, this is what I did. So I thought, I want to get a backing band. Now, I was friends with you, so right away I said, do you want to join the band? And I forget if you said that you could play bass or if I suggested it, whatever it was, you became the bass player. And normally you're a guitar player, but you were an excellent bass player. Then I had talked to my friend Dennis, who was also your friend. And he, now that you mentioned slide guitar, he was a huge Allman Brothers fan. So he learned to play slide guitar before he learned to play guitar regularly.
And he's really good at it too. He was
so good. So he was the lead guitar player. I was kind of rhythm, cause I'm not really that great a guitar player. I'm functional. So he was really good and kind of quirky in that he learned guitar, you know, this kind of backwards way through slide and then, you know, normal. And then we got a drummer, and then another drummer, a percussionist, just kind of slid up next to us. And we're like, yeah, you're in the band now. And then the keyboard player was the organ scholar of the school. And I don't remember exactly how we all formed, but I remember thinking, I'm so lucky that I have all these people because they're arguably the best in their instrument or top of, you know, that want to play with me. And I my approach to you guys was always like, listen, the guys that wrote these songs, your Dylans, your Who's, your Rolling Stones, whatever, even they would, especially Dylan, would play these songs differently, you know, every time if they felt like it. Dylan might speed up a song twice as fast. He might slow it down. It might be in a minor key, different key, whatever. So I want to take these recordings. I don't want you to hit every beat unless you're really feeling it. I want to do this song the way we would do this song. So we did Sunshine of Your Love, but we did it twice as fast. We did really deep cut Dylan stuff. We did Can You Please Crawl Out Your Window, which like nobody knows except super fans. We did Sad Eyed Lady of the Lowlands, if I could remember most of the lyrics, which sometimes I would forget, and we would go off on a jam to cover it up.
But yeah, that was the one we really would like unwind to.
Yeah, because that was like right before we would always open with Maggie's Farm and we'd close with like a Rolling Stone. So Sad Eyed Lady was kind of our lead up into like a Rolling Stone. And
Tombstone Blues too, we did that. And that's the one that we would speed up sometimes too.
Yeah, and that was also the one we most often forgot to play.
Yeah, because it was like either we forgot to play it or we'd play it like, you know, 20 beats faster than what the original tempo was.
Yeah, and we would do, like I said, we did Cherub Rock by Smashing Pumpkins. We did Blister in the Sun by Violent Femmes. It was really fun. We would drag out forever because I would, you know, that part where he gets quieter and quieter. I would just like, every beat would be just a little bit quieter and be like so quiet. I would drag that thing out like forever and it was really fun.
Remember we would all like go to the, we would all sing to the floor during that too. Like,
oh, all I of remember us. That because I was looking out straight, but that makes me happy.
Yeah, and then like that was also the one song too where we really drew a dance crowd too. Like I actually vividly remember like the first three rows of the student campus center where we performed. Like they were actually legitimately dancing to "Blister in the Sun." So yeah, that's a success in my book.
Yeah, and I remember very specifically because we were in the Battle of the Bands, and this is specifically what I put the band together for. Was I was always jealous of the Battle of the Bands guys. So I wanted to be in it. We opened, we were their sound check band. We did Maggie's Farm and I was just like feeling so good. I was like, yeah, we sound better than ever because we're amplified properly and we're really nailing it. And then we didn't advance to the next round because it was indoors instead of outdoors because it was raining so bad and people were just milling around getting settled. And I think they were going purely on crowd reaction. So I was like, bullshit. Oh my God. Like I was mad.
Yeah. So, we felt robbed.
Know, yeah. We felt very robbed. And cause I was like, that was our best show, I thought. And then, so when we did our, it was called the 10 spot, it was in the campus center. So there's kids like, it's like a deli and a bar in the back. And up front was like a performance space where they had a lot of comedians.
The bar is key though. That was very strategic. Cause that we drew people from the bar to the main performance area. I vividly remember that too. Like, yeah, oh shit, this is cool. People started like moving from the bar all the way to like our stage.
Yeah, I don't remember that. I'm glad you remember that. And then, but so I bring that up because I remember very specifically the guy who was in the band that won the Battle of the Bands was up front dancing harder than anybody. And I was like, okay, we didn't win, but that's just because contests are bullshit. We're good.
Oh yeah, and we were the only band that actually played, you know, like at the end of. So for the listeners, we went to Holy Cross, which is over in Worcester. At the end of spring semester, I think it's like the last weekend of class. They have this this weekend called Spring Weekend, where like you know it's just parties galore, both on campus and off campus. And I believe because we were like riding off of the momentum of that. Battle of the Bands, like we actually got invited to play like a house party.
We did, yeah.
Off campus. And that was like the biggest crowd we ever played to because like we were on an elevated hill. So all the parties that were going on below us, like, and these were all like, you know, different parties going on at the same time. They were all stopping what they're doing and like, you know, looking up at the top of the hill or the top of the street and just listening to us. And, you know, I think we definitely drew a crowd there.
Yeah, and it's so interesting when we talk about that show because so first of all that show I didn't know there were any lower levels. I couldn't really see a hill because I was going through a little bit of a rough time at the time, so I was very much like in my own head, and there was no microphone, so I was just screaming vocals as loud as I could over the instruments, and I couldn't see anybody, so I assumed like, oh yeah, there was like five people just standing around, and then you remember it as this big sweeping, like that was our Woodstock kind of a thing, and I'm just like, oh yeah, okay, I didn't see them, but I believe you. And like,
yeah, because
for hours too, we played for like 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah, we were the only band playing that weekend. All the other, yeah. No one else was playing, so that's that. I think that's why we got the attention we did.
Yeah.
Like, I think everyone else was like too inebriated to, you know, assemble a last minute, you know, off campus show.
Yeah, and this is the last thing I'll say about our history as bandmates. I truly believe, not because of me, but because of who most of the rest of the guys were. We were the most like rock and roll in terms of like sex, drugs, and rock and roll of all the bands at Holy Cross, because like, there were some people in our band who were like pretty much out of their mind. Like there was one guy who would just stop playing in the middle because he was like, I got this. And he would just start wandering around the room. And like, there was stories, and I won't blow up any spots, but of like people sneaking strippers into their rooms supposedly. And like, I truly in my heart believe if we were in a hotel room, the TV might've ended up out the window, like Keith Moon style.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. I wouldn't have thrown it, but someone might have.
Oh yeah, definitely someone in the rhythm section would have definitely thrown it.
Yeah, is that a way of saying you would do it?
Yeah. give me enough brandy, I think I would.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah, and I remember when we did our 10 spot, and I won't say who it was, but we all kind of, you know, gave each other a hug at the end because it was a really fun gig, and one member just kind of like, he had sunglasses on, and he pulls them up, and he goes, I took a tab of acid for this shit, man. I was like, oh yeah. Cool. And it didn't affect his playing. So I professionally, you do you, buddy. That's pretty great.
Oh yeah. He got the job done.
He sure did. Yeah. All right. So, what's a, album, you know, normally I say, what's a musical cast album, that you want to introduce me to, but like we said, because you're more of a, like a metalhead, what's an album or a couple albums or whatever that you really want to share with me?
Okay. So, so the first one, so I know I talked about the Gamelon, the Balinese Gamelon Ensemble. So there's one album that, I would highly recommend. Hopefully I'm trying to see if there's a video recording. It's called, I'm going to definitely butcher the name of it. So it's called Gender Wayang of Sukawati Village. So okay. That's in Bali. It's basically the music that accompanied this performance called a Wayang Kulit, which in Balinese, that's a shadow puppet play. Because Bali is really, they're like famous for not just the dance and the music, but they pioneered the shadow puppet scenery. And these are like really intricate, like I'm talking like 5-6 foot tall puppets that they will project over a sheet. And
oh, that sounds terrifying. Like, if you walk in there and, like, you did one too many edibles, it's like, uh-oh. The shadows are here.
Oh, yeah, dude. They're not like anything Disney. Like, there's, like, you know, like, the shadow puppets, they're cool. Like, it's like something out of Tim Burton. Like, they're very tall and spindly and lanky. They have, like, those elongated fingers and facial side profiles. And, like, you know, they have fangs. It's like really trippy. Like, yeah, if you went in with like an edible or, you know, some shrooms, you would definitely go on a ride with that. But what's cool about it is that it's the music for it is just so technical, and it's very complex. But at the same time, it works with beautifully with like the movements of the shadow puppets and the singing. So that's the first one I recommend. It's the Gender Wayang of Sukawati Village recording. And then the other one I would recommend, it's also Gamelon, is if you go into YouTube, if you type in anything called Kecak, which is spelled K-E-C-A-K, it is a vocal chant, usually composed of like 40 to 50 dancers. And it's a chant based out of the Hindu scripture, the Ramayana. And it's to honor the monkey god Hanuman, and like each section of that of those dancers has a different rhythm that they like kind of chant. So it's like oh 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 oh, And then like another group would be like, and then you'd have like another portion just sing straight, like one, two, you know, like, oh, 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 oh. And you interlocks. And it's like this crazy, like chanting.
It's like a polyrhythm thing.
Yeah, it's like polyrhythmic, but at times it interlocks and it's just really cool. And there's like a whole dance to it where, like, you know, you'll form circles, you'll do these weaving patterns of dancing. It's really something. It's a very ancient tradition too.
And then bring out the gongs.
And then the gongs, of course, yeah. And then in terms of like, so, and then for, just for regular albums, one album that I think a lot of like musical and Broadway people would enjoy, and I think you might be familiar with this album, is I recently got back into the Flaming Lips.
Okay, I'm actually a pretty big Flaming Lips fan. Which album?
Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots.
Classic. It's that album's classic. So good.
That album is just screaming to be made into a musical or some sort of theater production because it's so theatric. It's like a beautiful concept album. It's a very simple story too, but it's like a world building type of album as well. Like, you know, they sing about all the robot characters in there. They have like instrumental interludes that literally, you know, if you close your eyes, you could just envision the movie going on. You know, this wonderful Oz, like it's like a Wizard of Oz type of like album. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel as the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, and you know, the Flaming Lips actually have written a song for musical theater. They contributed a song to the SpongeBob musical. I'm not even kidding.
No, I totally believe that. Oh, yeah. Really? What's dude, it called?
I don't remember what it was called. I think it might have been the Act One closer, but like, dude, the writer list for the SpongeBob musical was insane. It was like Jonathan Coulton wrote the opening song. They Might Be Giants wrote the finale. Flaming Lips did one. Brian Eno and Bowie wrote Plankton's song. Like, I think John Legend might have written a song. Plain White Tees wrote a song. Like, it was like a, it was very much like a who's who of music wrote the SpongeBob musical. And that's why, beyond my comprehension, it's pretty good.
Oh, yeah. No, that's I did not know. I have to check that out now. But yeah, I mean, like, you can just tell, like, you know, if you ever seen Flaming Lips live too, it's just so theatrical. Like, they have like people dressed up as aliens and Santa Claus and so much confetti and massive beach balls and like, you know, and then like just all the visuals that you project on screen. It's like a full on theater production.
Yeah, I actually did see the Flaming Lips at a festival in Park Slope, and they played during the day, which is a little bit of a problem because they had like all these like plastic sort of like spheres that were lining the stage and lighting up, but it was light out, so it didn't really impact that much. But like, man, they're a good band. I'm a big fan of the Flaming Lips. Sometimes they get a little too weird by half, but like they're pretty solid. And The Terror had just come out, which is their like weird, unpleasant album because Wayne Coyne was going through a gnarly divorce.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, he's really good at expressing, like, you know, turning his tragedy into really beautiful music, though.
Yeah, I saw him in Katz's Deli once, but I didn't say anything.
Oh, really? Oh, one of my friends from Guam, he lived in Tulsa for a little bit, and that's where the Flaming Lips are from, and he ran into him. He actually met Wayne Coyne, and he said, like, yeah, he's a really odd but cool fellow.
That's good. Well, Rick, this has been really, really good. Where can people find you on the internet and find your music?
All right. So right now I have an Instagram. Follow me. So my stage name is Rick Scale, R-I-K-S-C-A-L-E. You can find me at rickscale.riffa, like, you know, like Riffer, but if someone from New England, which that's who I am.
Riffa. Go to Duncan's and do it with Riffa.
You got to throw a really good Riffa here. Really good Riffa. But yeah, so it's rickscale.riffa. Right now I only have a few posts, but I'm going to be moving some of my more musical stuff that I did in my private posts onto that public one. So stay tuned for that. We also have a Instagram live show that we do weekly as well.
Yes, called New Metal AF, where metal is new to Alex Vasella, and I will make theater references while you're trying to teach me things.
Oh, that's totally fine, though. I'm going to try to find some more theatrical bands to, like, so we get a happy intersect with the both.
Yeah, well, Dream Theater, it's right in the name.
Yeah, exactly, Dream Theater, yeah. Anything with rock operas. Well, I think I'm going to start fishing for some rock operas to talk about for that show.
I am a huge fan of the rock opera, just in general, to the point where I was once described to by my college roommate a rock opera that I forget if he saw it or if his friend wrote it or if he was in it. I think his friend wrote it and he saw it. And he was just, and it sounded so cheesy, but I love rock opera tropes so much. I was like, I'm so mad I can't see this. It was like, I think it was about like witches or something. And they were like holding their hands over like cauldrons and then like guitars came out of them and they started wailing. And I was just like, I'm so mad I can't see this.
No.
I love it.
That's amazing.
I love a rock opera.
Nothing like one.
See you next week on Broadway, baby.
All right, thank you, guys. Hey.